Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We start off with our movie critic, Gray Drake. She's here to analyze the winners and the losers at this year's Academy Awards and what it all means for these actors' careers in Hollywood. We then chat with fashion blogger Nikki Blazina about the fashion that we saw at the Oscars and what it means for us as consumers. What fashion trends are going to come our way because of what the A-listers wore on Oscar night. We're also joined by our dietitian, Kim Airy, who gives us some great advice if we decide to become vegan or vegetarian. We then wrap things up with a remix from Nikki Williams, Glowing.
Capture your need for sound.
The granddaddy of all award shows has just come and gone, and we are left to analyze what happened at this year's Academy Awards and what the aftermath will be now that we know who walked away as winners and losers. To help put this all into perspective is our movie critic from Rotten Tomatoes, who also appears on CNN, Gray Drake. Gray, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
We saw your boobs. We saw your boobs. In the movie that we saw your boobs.
Awesome. I'm glad you started there because that was going to be my first question. How did Seth MacFarlane do?
I think he was pretty good. I wouldn't give him an A, but he did make me laugh. I thought that he pushed the envelope just enough. He wasn't too mean, which is what I was scared about. And ultimately, I think my favorite bit was the opening with the William Shatner, where they did this whole kind of, you know, like Shatner warning Seth MacFarlane of the future kind of deal. I thought that was very clever. It was a very updated Billy Crystal feel.
And I have a question for you, though. In the last sort of days since the Oscars, it seems that there's haters and lovers of Seth MacFarlane. So is there, I mean, I know he didn't push it too far, but like the Adele and Melissa McCarthy thing, was that sort of too much?
Yeah, you know, what's funny is that I guess I'm an idiot because when he said it, I laughed because I'm so angry with Rex Reed.
Right.
And then later I read that people were getting upset because that's basically a way of calling Adele fat. And I went, oh, yeah, I guess it is. And I felt dumb. It's hard for me to see the joke any other way than how I originally saw it.
Okay.
Which was a slam to Rex Reed, but I understand people's concern. Mm-hmm. So I think that my reaction is actually very similar to how I felt about him as a host, which is, oh yeah, I see why you hated him. But I laughed.
Okay. Okay. I thought my favorite joke I think of the whole night is this. It was his first one where he said, you know, the quest to make Tommy Lee laugh starts now. I thought that was perfect.
I know. I was surprised that he laughed. I saw him laugh in my Men in Black 3 interview. He laughed at me because I made fun of myself, and it was every bit as terrifying on television as it is in real life.
Do you think he was ticked that he didn't win for Best Supporting, or do you think everyone knew it was going to be Christoph Waltz?
I don't think everyone knew it was going to be Christoph Waltz. I was just looking at Entertainment Weekly's predictions, and they thought it would be Robert De Niro.
Oh.
And if you, I believe that I was saying to you that if TLJ didn't win, it would definitely be RDN, which is never how I abbreviate their names, by the way. But I do think that, I was surprised. When I heard Christoph Waltz, I got really surprised. Not because I didn't think he had a shot at all, just because I was focusing on those other two so much. So I don't think Tommy Lee Jones is upset.
Okay.
Because if I had to guess, Tommy Lee Jones is such a difficult human being. I would assume that his take on awards is like, I'll show up if I have to. It's fine if they want to give it to me, and if they don't, I'm just going to go home and be the exact same horrible person that I am before I won.
You know what's funny is I was thinking the other day about the conversation you and I had had about him, and then sort of seeing sometimes those screenshots where they flip to him during the, you know, Academy Awards, and then I was thinking about all the roles or, you know, some of the movies I've seen him in, and I feel like in every character that he has taken on, he puts a piece of himself in it, which is always the curmudgeon-y part. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I think that he's a great actor. I think he's so talented, and I think that he definitely bleeds through underneath it all. Because even when he's being someone lovable, he's someone lovable and prickly.
Right.
So yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely.
I had just a sidebar question for you. When he and Meryl Streep worked together, do you think that went over well? Like, did he calm his prickly working with her?
I have no idea. I don't think he ever calms it. They were in Hope Springs together, which was, I thought, a really interesting movie about a demographic that we don't often see looked at in the movies, and their marriage. So it's kind of an awkward movie if you're not expecting it to be about older people sex.
Right.
But obviously they're great actors, and the script was pretty good. So I have read articles from where people are quoted, like Josh Brolin and Charlize Theron and Sally Field, about him and how Tommy Lee Jones never changes. And he, even when you know him,
okay,
he still doesn't even change. And I'll tell you what, I have an interview with him tomorrow. This is my second interview with him. And I'm just like, I'm not even going to try. Like, I can't try to endear myself to him. Like, there's nothing I can do. I'm just going to hope that he answers the questions with more than a one-word answer.
OMG. Yeah, I just keep thinking that at some point, but I guess now there's no point, but I would have felt that at some point, some studio head or whatever, or like head of marketing for the press junkets would say, Tommy Lee, suck it up and do your job and don't be an ass.
Yeah, I think that people would have that kind of control if he wasn't a good actor.
Right.
I think if he cared at all about, you know, what those people thought, and he was something malleable as a human being and a performer, then it would be different. But as it is, I mean, he is one of our acting legends.
Right.
So nobody really tells him what to do, and I don't think they ever have.
Okay.
So I think that he's here to stay the way he is.
Gotcha. So I wanted to ask you about this. Anne Hathaway, I think you had said that you thought she was going to walk away with it anyways. What was your take on, you know, her winning, her acceptance speech, and then even after in the press room when she started to break down?
I was not surprised in the slightest when she won, because she's won everything else, and she was absolutely my prediction. So there's always something about Anne Hathaway that I really like her on screen. I always enjoy her performances. But as a person, I always feel like she's just the slightest bit disingenuous.
Uh-huh, yep.
And I can't get past it. I can't articulate it. I can't put my finger on why that is. And I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, because she's not my best friend, so I don't know her, so it's not, you know, so I can't really even figure out what the deal is. But
okay,
I know that she loves her job, and I was in the press room, you know, when she kind of got choked up and was being emotional, and you know, there are just some people that are like that.
Yeah.
Some people that even when they are visibly moved, you still are kind of doubting it.
Yes, I'm glad you said that, because like when I saw the clip on TV, I was like, I felt like she was acting it out, like, kind of.
Yeah, and you know the thing about being an actor is that you have to be vulnerable and you have to be very emotional and you have to be a little, I think, uncomfortable in your own skin. And so based on what a good actress and how good an actress she is, perhaps she's so awkward in genuine moments in real life,
uh-huh,
that she just acts like she's feeling them.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think maybe, you know, she's a little nerdy and she's a little awkward in social situations. And it just so happens that she is such a good actress that she's forced to be in all those situations all the time. So she acts like a weirdo. It's possible.
Right. Do you find that with Kristen Stewart? Because she's kind of weird, I feel, too, when she does, like, press.
Kristen Stewart is an awkward human being, but I've interviewed her twice.
Okay.
And each time, I love her.
Okay, that's great to know. Good to know.
I couldn't be more surprised, because she reminds me very, very much of my best friend.
Okay.
And so when I walk into the room, I feel like we're best friends. And in both interviews, we have laughed, and she's given me awesome answers, and she's, like, charmingly self-deprecating, and she's completely different than how she seems.
Good.
Everywhere else.
Good. That's awesome. Well, I'm glad to know that, because, you know, I find, you know, people come down hard on her, and I like her, but, like, I've seen her in some situations where, like, when she's being interviewed, and it looks like, I mean, I kind of feel like she's uncomfortable, and I feel bad for her, but then I feel like I'm not sure if she's just being snotty or not. And then now I'm glad you've cleared that up for all of us.
Yeah, I've never, ever gotten a snotty vibe from her. She's an extremely awkward individual that seems to despise all of the kind of stupid attention that she gets.
Right.
Because if you walk into an interview with Kristen Stewart and go, oh my God, girl, Robert Pattinson's so dreamboat, what, LOL? I mean, she doesn't have a response to that. And that's how the majority of these interviews go.
Okay.
You know, so, but my experience has been that when you just talk to her like a movie lover,
yeah,
and talk to her about the project that she's working in and ask her a thoughtful question, she's all in and she's really cool. So I surprisingly like Kristen Stewart in person, and I thought she was really good and on the road.
Yeah.
And I hope to see more performances like that out of her, because I'm done with her being the quiet, awkward one.
Yep.
I thought that Snow White and the Huntsman was a good, better role for her, but I'm looking forward to what she does next.
And sidebar question for her, do you think she'll ever be nominated for an Academy Award?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if she keeps picking the right roles, I think she's a good enough actress. Because right now she's just kind of done the same thing, but I believe there's more in her.
Okay.
Because she started so young, I think she will. I think it's absolutely possible she'll be nominated, because she's going to be working for a long time, as long as she picks the right role.
And just a backtrack question for a second regarding Anne Hathaway. Does her stock rise even more with this win, or was she already up there? And because I remember last year you and I talked about Octavia Spencer winning that and how her stock was going to rise even more, even though she was sort of climbing already. But it seems like Anne is in a different space than Octavia was last year.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Octavia had been working for a really long time and nobody knew who she was. And now everybody knows who she is, and she's worked a ton. Before this, Anne Hathaway was still a huge star.
Okay.
And now she's just kind of approaching, like, now I think it might be that, you know, she's been in so many movies and so many of them are good, and we're always counting on her for a good performance. The pressure's kind of on for her to pick the right movies. Like, let's hope she doesn't start picking crap movies to
okay.
do.
Gotcha. Joining us on the show is Gray Drake, senior editor at RottenTomatoes.com. Rotten Tomatoes, you can check it out at RottenTomatoes.com. She's also our movie critic here at The Kelly Alexander Show. So I have to get to Best Actress Jennifer Lawrence. How did you feel about that? And the little trip going up the stairs. I felt like that just endeared us, you know, her to us more.
Yeah, absolutely. Jennifer Lawrence is the most fun interview of the entire award season, for sure. She's just so honest. She doesn't seem to have a filter, and she still seems very amused by all of the goings-on. I anticipated her winning. As I said, it was between she and Jessica Chastain for the most part. And Jennifer Lawrence has gotten so much love from everyone that I thought she had the edge. So I was not surprised to see her win. I was surprised to see her fall.
Uh-huh.
But in the press room, she said that just because her dress is long, and that's the kind of stuff that you can expect from her. Like, you try to ask her a question, you're like, oh man, this is going to be really deep. And she's like, no, my dress is, I just fell. Like, there's no reason. She's like, I didn't eat a lot. I also did have a shot. There you go.
Right. Awesome.
You know, I just love how no nonsense she is. So I'm happy that she won. I still like, personally, my pick would have been Jessica Chastain, or for an upset, Emmanuel Riva for Amour.
Okay.
But I'm not unhappy that she won, because when I saw Silver Linings Playbook, I was floored by how great it was.
Fantastic. Now, regarding Jessica Chastain, with her not winning, did she lose any luster, or did that just make her like sort of the it girl going into this year anyway? Like, she'll keep pulling and pushing and doing her thing.
She is not going to be affected by this, because she's so darn good, and she's such a good way of picking projects. You cannot pigeonhole her, and she is so in love with what she does that she's going to keep picking great roles, and she'll keep showing up in a million things. So all this means for Jessica Chastain is that she's going to get more nominations and win more awards down the road.
Daniel Day-Lewis. Not, was that a shocker at all or not?
No, not in the slightest. Best speech of the night, though. I loved his Margaret Thatcher joke.
Yeah.
And he's just a gem. And he's been giving great speeches all season. Someone asked him a question about that in the press room. And he was saying, like, you know, I enjoy it so much more when people are just so in the moment that they fumble through their speeches. And no one helps me with my speeches, because, you know, if I can't just be in that moment and express what I'm actually thinking, then I'm in trouble.
Right.
And he's magnificent. And I'm so happy that he's now the most winning actor in Oscar history.
With three, right? Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Officially. So that's lovely. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. I get to take a photo with him at the Critics' Choice Awards. And it was just, even just standing next to him was a highlight of my life. So I'm really happy that he won, and it wasn't a surprise in the slightest.
Does he mainly lives over in Ireland, right? Is that correct?
I believe so. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. So I have to talk about Best Picture to Argo. It looked like Ben Affleck was going to faint.
Yeah, I was like, somebody tell him to take a breath.
Yeah, like, I was impressed. I was surprised how fumbly he was, considering the other dude spoke for like 2 minutes before Ben even, I felt Ben would have had a moment to compose himself, and he just was like, he was like a giddy schoolgirl.
I know, I think that makes it worse. When you're standing up there and those hormones are surging and, you know, your adrenaline is coursing through your veins, and then you just explode into the mic, and I loved it. I thought it was such a genuine moment.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the world's biggest Ben Affleck fan, because over at Rotten Tomatoes, Argo won 2 Golden Tomato Awards this year, and we got to speak with him. And he was lovely. I already liked him. And now after talking to him, he's so normal and he's so funny and he's so proud of his movie without being a jerk.
Okay. Yeah.
But I just love him to pieces. Like, it was really, I thought it was a wonderful moment. I loved that he was, you know, he thanked his wife, Jennifer Garner, and was like, who has nothing to do with Iran? And it was just so cute in a ceremony that didn't give people enough time to talk.
No.
That played people off in a really tasteless way.
Yep.
No real standout speeches. But Ben Affleck's, you know, his portion of the Argo speech was really sweet. And, gray fun fact, at the end of my night on Oscar Sunday, mm-hmm. we were held at security to exit the building. And everyone was getting very frustrated because that makes no sense.
Right.
And then we were finally let out in small batches. And I was all by myself, and I was wheeling my bag, and I was in my formal wear. And I was furious, and I just wanted to go home. And I look up, and standing in front of me is just George Clooney.
Wow!
Just with his Oscar, smiling, and so I look at him, and he goes, "Ma'am, I just need to see your ID. I'm just checking IDs."
Nice.
And I look at him and get your hand on the buzzer, because what I said to him, I just looked at him and I went, Argo yourself, George. And he looked at me, and then we laughed and laughed, and then he just disappeared.
Wow.
Like, he went into the little tunnel where the talent goes, where no journalists are allowed ever under any circumstances. He just disappeared. And I was like, wow, I wish someone had been here to see that happen.
Yes.
Like, that was crazy.
That's awesome. You must have interviewed him in the past.
I have never interviewed George Clooney.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, I haven't. And it was just such a special little sighting. And that was how I ended my night.
Good for you. That's awesome. And what do you think of, he seemed very, in a laid-back mood, like just whatever we saw him on the red carpet and stuff. Like, is he always like that? It just feels like he's very chill.
I would assume so. Based on everything I've ever seen of him, I think that he just takes this in stride. He's got Hollywood in his veins. He's a classy dude. He doesn't seem to get, you know, flummoxed by any of this stuff. And plus, I mean, the picture was, he was just going up for his producing role for Argo.
Right.
You know, it wasn't about him as an actor. So I think that the heat was off him a little bit. So he's probably enjoying it a lot.
I have to just touch on Ang Lee. Was that a surprise that he won that for Best Director?
You know, it was, actually. I really thought Steven Spielberg would win for Lincoln. But I'm very happy that Ang Lee won, because Life of Pi was a stunning movie. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad that it won visual effects awards. And I also like that it brings some awareness to the fact that visual effects houses are in trouble in this economy. And Rhythm and Hughes, that did Life of Pi, is out of business.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm disappointed that they didn't bring it up more in the ceremony. But I think, you know, social media has really got it. Where everybody's kind of on it. And so I'm glad he won not only because Life of Pi was a great movie, but because it brings attention to that.
Okay. Now, there was lots of music going on this year, which I felt we haven't had in a long time. What was your take on all the performances and, you know, Barbra Streisand, Adele? Like, I felt Adele sort of brightened up the night a little.
Very much so, although I don't think she was mixed right. I didn't understand.
No, I know it was bad.
Yeah, it was weird. And I didn't understand why we were saluting musicals of the last 11 years.
Yep.
Like, that didn't make sense to me, and I didn't think that anything about the production of the show was meant to save time. And why am I watching all that jazz all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Like, I loved Chicago, but it already won its award, its time is through, and was anyone really just clamoring for a Chicago reunion? No.
No.
So, I thought that it would have been much better if they were really saluting musicals. It would have made a lot more sense for them to do medleys.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we had to listen to entire numbers, and I thought the Les Mis was awkward. I didn't enjoy that part of it.
Okay.
I usually took that time in the press room to refill on my delectable tiramisu.
Nice. I just wanted to speak to, because obviously you're in the know, being down there and all that sort of stuff. Can you just tell the listeners what it was like knowing that, and it's not that this is a surprise because this happens every year, but if I got this right or if I understand this correctly, the gift bags for the nominees and the presenters was worth about $48,000?
Oh, dear. I actually don't know anything about that.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know anything. I sure wish I'd got one. But I thought they were trying to scale those back, but I guess maybe they scaled it back to 48 from 125. Who knows?
Right. Okay. Yeah, because I didn't hear what was in them, but I did hear it was about worth $48,000 or something. So, okay.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I'm surprised that they were able to gift people with Toyota Camrys in a bag. You know, gosh, that must have been really hard for them to carry down
exactly.
The carpet.
Before I let you bounce, can you give me your final impressions of the overall thing with the Oscars? And then what do we have to look forward to, you know, in movies coming out in the next little while that people should keep their heads on straight for?
In a word, the 85th Annual Academy Awards, that is now just known as the Oscars, was...
Okay.
Like, I was fine with it. I was fine with it. I didn't think that it was that spectacular. The most spectacular part for me was that it was my first one that I've ever attended, and I was honored to be there for Rotten Tomatoes. So that was exciting. And what we have to look forward to in movies this year, well, I've already got my sights set on the summer, where we're going to see more comic book movies. We've got Robert Downey Jr. back in Iron Man 3.
Awesome.
It looks as though we've got, on the schedule thus far, very little geared towards women.
Okay. Uh-oh.
So we've got a lot of, like, Despicable Me 2 for the family, which will be fun, but we've also got, like, you know, just a lot of action and a lot more popcorn flicks than usual. Not a whole lot of, like, loving for the ladies, especially in the early summer. So it's going to be interesting. You know, past that this year, we've got another Hunger Games coming out, so we'll get more people talking about Jennifer Lawrence. People are always going to be talking about Jennifer Lawrence, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
From here on out, that's how this girl's life is going to be. But I actually am really excited for 2013. I think it's going to be good. And coming up soon, a movie about magic.
Oh, wow.
The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, and I think that one's going to be really fun with Jim Carrey.
Awesome. So we'll check in with you then before the summer so that you let us know how things are going. And thank you so much as usual, Gray.
Good. You're welcome. Good to be back. Hooray for Hollywood.
That's our movie critic, Gray Drake. Again, you can find her at Rotten Tomatoes, rottentomatoes.com. You can also follow her on Twitter at Gray Drake.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
The Academy Awards have come and gone, but something that's going to remain in our minds for the next weeks and months to come are some of the fashions that we saw on the red carpet. The gowns and the suits have an impact on current fashion trends. So to help us analyze what styles are going to play a part in our lives over the next little while is creator of a Oat Mess fashion blog, Nikki Blazina. Nikki, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
So, Nikki, first of all, what do you think that these Oscars were about fashion-wise? You know, did things sort of stick out to you, and were people playing it safe or actually making a statement?
To be honest, I think this season, I mean, after the Golden Globes, I thought people played it a little bit too safe, but I think celebrities definitely stretched their sartorial muscles a little bit more for the Oscars. I mean, you saw Jennifer Lawrence in that gorgeous Dior gown that she unfortunately tripped up the stage in. I mean, that was just a beautiful, beautiful creation that she was wearing. We saw a lot more like sex appeal on the red carpet with kind of skin tight, strapless gowns, a lot of shine, a lot of sequins. I was really impressed with the red carpet this year, I must say.
Now, one trend that I noticed was sort of this medium shoulder pad look. I noticed that with Halle Berry and Jane Fonda. Is that where we're headed again, back to the 80s shoulder pads?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think you might see it a little bit, but there was a big resurgence in that trend a couple of years ago with the French designer at the time for Balmain, Christophe Descarnin. He did a big resurgence of shoulder pads, and we saw those on blazers and on sweaters and on T-shirts and everything. And I don't think we're quite ready to go back there so soon after. So I'm hoping those were isolated shoulder pad occurrences, and we can just maybe revisit that in 10 years or so.
How did you find the color palettes overall? Because sort of thinking back, I didn't really see a lot of vibrant color, and I know that some people tend to play it safe for the Oscars, but again, the person that stuck out for me was that yellow from Jane Fonda, and then Jennifer Aniston looked really sort of vibrant in that red.
There was definitely less color, I would say, from the Golden Globes. I mean, there are a lot of women wearing red dresses on the red carpet at the Golden Globe Awards, but there were still a few women that took risks with color. I mean, you're right. Jennifer Aniston looked amazing in that red dress. I think it was Valentino. I'm not sure, though. Jane Fonda was wearing that bright yellow Versace dress, and she looked amazing as well. But yeah, there were definitely a lot more like muted color palettes. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence actually wore a really similar dress to her Oscar, dressed in red at the Golden Globe, yet went for the more toned down blush color at the Oscars. And Jessica Chastain, she wore that teal blue dress at the Golden Globes, and then again wore more of a blush tone as well. So I think that might be a trend we're going to see a little bit this summer, is more muted palettes and kind of more springy blush colors and less in your face. I mean, Jane Fonda's dress is pretty in your face, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it was very out there, like this canary yellow, but I don't know, I thought she rocked it.
She did, but what can't Jane Fonda rock? She can do anything.
Right. Were you
amazing.
Expecting at all any more color? You know, because again, you were right with that muted sort of tone. Like, that's what I noticed quite a bit.
I was honestly expecting a little bit more color than what we saw, to be honest. I mean, it's the Oscars, and people want to look amazing because these photos are going to last forever. But I mean, even Anne Hathaway, I thought her dress was rather disappointing. I mean, the pale pink Prada gown she wore always looked amazing on the red carpet and has worn beautiful, extravagant gowns and has never really been one to quite play it safe yet. She ended up opting for a gown that I don't think fit her very well, primarily. I mean, the seams on the bust line, she was freezing cold, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It was just not a flattering fit for her. So I would have liked to have seen more from her, for sure. And I would have liked to have seen a little bit more color as well, given that it is almost spring. And I mean, dear God, I hope it is almost spring, but it would have been nice to have seen it on the red carpet. I mean, they're in Los Angeles. It's spring for them, so.
What did you think of Halle Berry's dress? Because, again, like, I know that she'd mentioned on the red carpet that she was going for, like, this Bond girl look, again, as the Oscars were celebrating Bond this year. I thought she looked pretty good.
Halle Berry looked amazing. I mean, her body is crazy. I don't have a better way to describe it. She just looked so good, and she looked really sexy, and it was the perfect dress for her. And if you do look back to what she wore at the Golden Globes, she definitely wins Most Improved in a month, because she was a train wreck at the Golden Globes. And she really stepped up her style game a little bit for the Oscars, and she looked fantastic.
What was your favorite gown of the night, then, if you look back over it all?
I would have to say my favorite gown was Charlize Theron.
Yes, oh, that's right.
She was wearing that. Did you like it?
Yeah,
like
the white. I just know that you brought it to my attention again. Yeah, the white ensemble.
Yeah, the white, she has that peplum waistline, which I'm not normally the biggest fan of, but it's when the peplum is when it's tight at the top to the waist, and then there's almost a ruffle around
mm-hmm.
the waist.
Yeah.
I think she looked incredible in it, and I think she would win. And just with her new cropped haircut and her strong it just showed off her strong shoulders and like how, she just looked amazing.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show this week is fashion expert and blogger Nikki Blazina. Make sure to check out her blog, aoatmess.ca. Who did not have, I guess, a good Oscar showing this year? Like, was there a dress that really, I know you mentioned Anne Hathaway, was there someone else that sort of really fell flat?
I might have to say Adele, which is an odd choice because she wasn't wearing anything particularly terrible by any means. She was wearing a black Jenny Packham sequin gown. She looked beautiful. But I just felt, every time I see Adele on the red carpet, she's wearing the exact same dress.
Right.
You can literally Photoshop her from any other red carpet, put her on a current one, and she'll probably be wearing the same thing. So, she's a beautiful girl. I'd really like to see her try something a little bit different, just because I think she could almost be like an ambassador for curvy girls to feel as though they don't need to be wearing just...
Was it a marked improvement, though, from what she was wearing at the Golden Globes? Because a lot of people were put off by that red sort of granny dress she had going on.
Was she wearing a red granny dress at the Golden Globes?
Do you remember that? Yeah, like it looked like it was someone's curtains.
I actually don't even remember that because I just... actually think she wears black dresses and everything.
Because I know, like, that was one of the comments that I remember after the Globes that a couple of my friends, that work with me at the radio station, we were sort of talking about stuff. And obviously, all of us are such huge Adele fans because she's just such an amazing artist. And she is pretty. She's so pretty. And then it was just an odd choice with this red sort of curtainy thing that she looked like she was wearing. So I guess, in my opinion, it was a marked improvement, you know, at the Oscars. But again, I do get what you're saying, that it was like sort of like a safe fashion choice for her.
Yeah, maybe that's why she went back to the plain black dress then. If she tried something, blew it.
Yeah.
Go back to her dress of choice.
Speaking of the curvy girls, what did you think of Melissa McCarthy? And I believe she was wearing that gray sort of number. I thought she looked pretty good. She was showing off her curves and her cleavage.
I don't know. I have to disagree with you on that one, Kelly. I thought Melissa McCarthy... I thought she was a hot mess.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
No pun intended on my blog.
Explain why.
I know it was a custom-made gown. When I found that out, it really surprised me because I just don't think the fit was there.
Okay.
And I think her actually being that rare, like, curvy woman in Hollywood, I really do think she could kind of be almost a role model or an ambassador to show women that, like, yeah, you can still be glamorous and be just as beautiful as all these people that don't eat on the red carpet and like not and feel awesome about it. And I think she could have done better. And I mean, her hair was a little too toddlers and tiaras.
Oh yeah, I agree with for sure. I very much agree with. I wanted to ask you as well, what do you think, or what trends from the Oscars do you think will sort of play down to us over the next couple of months? I know you mentioned the muted colors will be something that we'll probably see.
Something that I noticed is that there is definitely a lack of sleeves. So I think we might see a return. I mean, it might be just because we're heading into summer, but I think we might see a return of kind of the strapless gown. I mean, most of the women that were up there were wearing either strapless gowns or very, like Halle Berry and Jane Fonda, I think, and Adele were the only women that wore sleeves, actually. So I think we might be seeing a little more skin this summer because of the Oscars. And I also think, in terms of the men, actually, I'm hoping, I have my fingers crossed, but we'll see men maybe take a few more style risks as well. This is a strange choice for best dressed. I mean, we normally think about the women, but I think Daniel Day-Lewis was best dressed in my books. Like, he looked incredible in that navy blue tuxedo.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I would love to see more men try the navy blue suit versus the plain black or gray.
What did you think of Samuel L. Jackson's suit? I thought he rocked. I thought he sort of was a little bit daring, even though the suit was classy.
I loved it. I don't know. I'm a sucker. I'm a sucker for that, like, Hugh Hefner, like, velvet jacket and loafed look. And, I mean, that's something I think even women can be inspired by. I mean, throw in a velvet blazer with some trousers and heels. And I think it's a way you can take kind of a menswear look and apply it to women's wear and still look. It's a sexy look. I'm not saying Samuel L. Jackson was sexy.
Well, I thought he looked really good, actually.
I think he looked great, and I love when people have kind of their own individual style, and people are usually so afraid to bring that out on the red carpet, but he owned it, and I love that.
You know, speaking of the suit thing and translating that to the women, you know, you don't often see, obviously, women wearing like a power suit to the Oscars, but I know obviously someone like an Ellen DeGeneres would, but I think the last person I remember really rocking a power suit that looked gorgeous was Janet Jackson back in 93 when she was actually nominated for an Academy Award for her song Again. And I don't know if you remember that. I'm not sure if you were born yet, but she was wearing this like white ivory or sort of off-white suit, and she had to perform. Actually, that's when they still had the original songs being performed on the show, and obviously with her being African-American, the white suit just, you know, looked gorgeous on her. She had the right sort of accessories going on. Would you be surprised next year if you actually saw someone other than Ellen DeGeneres wearing like a really cool suit?
I would love that, to be honest. I think that would be something. I think we need to, like, people, these Hollywood stylists have access to everything. These celebrities have access to everything. Why not mix up the red carpet a bit? I mean, obviously there's one night where you get to wear a beautiful gown, and I'm sure, but us lay people don't get to do that often. But I mean, as a celebrity, you're always wearing beautiful gowns. Why not try something new? I think we saw at the Golden Globes again, like Amy Poehler wore kind of a black pantsuit. I think it was Stella McCartney, just on the red carpet and for a bit of the hosting. And I think that was a step in the right direction for women to kind of think outside the ball gown and try something a little more exciting.
Perfect. I'm glad we talked about that, because I you know, part of me too, actually, I wanted to bring you back just to the Grammys for a sec. I believe it was Beyonce that she showed up wearing like a pantsuit. Well, it didn't have a blazer, but she was wearing that to the Grammys, and she was the only female. And considering she is the it female of 2013 so far, after coming off the Super Bowl and all that sort of stuff, I thought it was really innovative of her to not wear a flashy gown and come out with like these hot black pants with the white, you know, going on.
And I mean, if Beyonce does that, that will trickle down.
Okay. Okay.
Now, anything Beyonce does right now is perfect okay. in the public eye. So
that's true.
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more of that.
Something I wanted to ask you about with the guys before we wrap things up is all these Oscar beards. It felt like it was, you know, the Stanley Cup playoffs, and all the guys were keeping their beards on for good luck. Because I just, you know, Clooney and Affleck and, you know, just everyone had these. Even like Justin Theroux, Jennifer Aniston's fiance, like, I'm not sure why he was rocking a beard all of a sudden.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan. Like, I thought pretty hard for George Clooney not to look good. But, I mean, he really tried last night.
Mm-hmm.
He really put in a good effort with that beard. I didn't think it was working for him. Ben Affleck's wasn't as bad, but I mean, yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan.
No,
if you can shave on one night of the year, why not shave for the Oscars?
Yeah,
right?
And I wanted to talk to you about this as well. You know, they actually had the full on beards going, which again I'm not a fan of, especially because they're such gorgeous guys. There's no reason for them to hide their faces, if you will, for whatever reason. Like, I get if it was for a role, but I don't think all three of them were trying to, you know, be in a role right now. But what do you think of, like, the scruffy thing going on when it comes time for the guys to dress up? For example, I am a huge David Beckham fan. I think he's gorgeous. I think, you know, he always has interesting fashion choices. But I remember seeing him not long ago. I think it was probably when he even signed, you know, for his latest soccer team, and they had, you know, the press going on, and he showed up with like day old stubble, and I was like, I don't get it. Like, you're so gorgeous. Why don't you have the clean shaven thing? I get if you're going out to the groceries on a Sunday and no one cares, but in front of all these people, I just find it really sort of disconcerting, this, you know, day and a half old stubble going on.
Yeah, I'm personally not a big fan as well. I mean, I don't mind it for, I mean, a casual day or whatnot, but I think, I don't know. I don't see why. I mean, other men have to shave every day for their jobs, and going to the Oscars is a part of your job, so shave.
Excellent. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan. I mean, don't they want to kiss their beautiful dates?
Yes.
Come on.
There you go. That's awesome. So, Nikki, before I let you go, I just wanted to ask you, coming into the spring, as most of us are around the world, what sort of thing do you think we should be on the lookout for? Is it that sleeveless sort of look that you were talking about?
I would say a lot of color blocking, actually, you'll see this spring. Black and white was a really big trend on the spring 2013 runway. So I think you'll see a lot of kind of black and white stripes and people kind of doing that like monochromatic, maybe head to toe white or head to toe black, maybe not as much black. But a lot of black and white color combinations for sure. So
fantastic.
Awesome. I would say go get yourself a pair of black and white striped trousers. I have them. My boyfriend told me I look like the Hamburglar, but they're pretty awesome. So it's going to be a trend, I promise.
Awesome. That's so great. Nikki, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me again.
That's fashion blogger Nikki Blazina. Again, make sure to check out her blog, aoutmess.ca.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Would you allow your children to decide for themselves whether to become a vegetarian or a vegan? This is a topic that is still highly debated. So here to discuss some of the challenges of becoming a vegetarian or a vegan is our dietitian and nutrition expert, Kim Airy. Kim, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
It's great to be here.
So should children and teenagers want to make their own decision when it comes to becoming a vegetarian or vegan?
A lot of them do. And I think it's, first of all, I think that parents have to see where this is coming from. It's really interesting. We see a lot of children that are very young, so 6 months, 2 years. Those children are not deciding on their own. It's their parents who are vegan or vegetarian, and they're just following along whatever the family is doing. But as the children get older, then they're more likely to make the decision.
As a dietitian, though, like, do you counsel parents to sort of have vegetarians or vegans? Like, is that like a thing to do?
It's a great thing to do. We have lots of evidence that is showing us, when we're studying children who've been brought up vegetarian, they're doing very well. They're thriving. There's a couple of things for us to look for, though, to make sure that they stay that way. And one of them is we have to make sure that you get vitamin B12 from fortified foods or from a supplement, because vitamin B12 is only found in animal products, and it's an essential nutrient. And by essential, we mean our body doesn't make it, but it really needs it to function. So you have to get it from an outside source. So look for making sure that they get some B12 in fortified foods or from a supplement, and that will make all the difference in the world.
Are you concerned if, let's say a 12 or a 13-year-old, who hasn't been a vegetarian or vegan comes to you and says, I want to be one? Like, do you want to find out the reasons why? Because sometimes I wonder if that's, they're jumping on some bandwagon without really knowing what's going on.
Well, I'm not so concerned about the reason why, because that's okay. I'm only a little concerned because I want to make sure that they haven't decided to become vegan or vegetarian because they think it's the key to weight loss or because they think it's the key to, some health benefit that we don't know. On the other hand, what I'm more concerned with is that I find those people are usually, those young people are usually really good at taking things out of their diet, but they're not really good at adding things back. So they'll stop eating meat, but they won't add any really good sources of protein and legumes. They'll stop eating cheese and dairy, but they won't be eating any vegetables that have a lot of calcium. The dark green leafy vegetables will have calcium in them. They're not doing that. Basically, what they end up doing is having all kinds of refined white flour foods, like a lot of pasta. They have a lot of chips. They have a lot of, bread. They have that kind of food. So their diet is very, very, very unbalanced. And that can lead to nutrition deficiencies, not enough protein, not enough iron, not enough B12, and not enough calcium, not enough vitamin D. And so those are the people I'm worried about. We have to make sure that they take the time to be mindful vegetarians. And by mindful, we mean planning what they're going to eat, thinking about what they're going to eat so they get all their nutrition.
Before I let you go any further, can you differentiate for us the difference between vegetarian and vegan?
Yes. Somebody who is a vegetarian will actually consume dairy products. So they will consume eggs, they will consume cheese, they'll drink milk. So they do get a certain amount of animal products. Somebody who is vegan is not consuming any type of animal product at all.
Gotcha.
Okay. No eggs, no cheese, no meat, no nothing.
Okay. So that means there is a significant difference and people really need to understand that difference.
Yes, there is a significant difference, certainly because in terms of nutrition, the biggest difference is somebody who is vegetarian is likely to be able to get B12 and likely to get all their calcium from the diet. The nutrient that might be missing is going to be iron. Whereas somebody who is vegan is and not consuming any animal products at all is likely to be missing B12, is likely or could be missing iron, could be missing calcium, could be missing some protein, could be missing omega-3 fats. So there's quite a few nutrients that if you're not conscientious about what you're eating and not making careful choices, you could be missing nutrients. It's possible not to miss the nutrients when you're vegan. It's possible to have a perfectly healthy diet, but you have to make some conscientious choices.
If you are a parent and you decide as a family, let's say you have been eating meat products or dairy or what have you, and then you decide to go vegan or vegetarian, I know we talked about planning, but I think, is it important that if you are making this choice that you stick with this choice? Because I'm assuming like going back and forth is not good either for the kid.
Well, actually, one of the things that we find works really well is to be what we call a flexitarian, which is somebody who does a bit of both. And, you know, start by introducing the concept, let's say, of Meatless Mondays, and start changing over some of your favorite recipes. For example, if your kids like chili, to add less and less meat till gradually you're just not putting any. Make some favorites. So instead of making tacos with meat, make bean burritos. Do those kind of things so that they're eating kind of similar things to what they're used to. And do that once a week, then up it to twice a week, and gradually increase the number of days where you're doing not eating animal products. And we find that actually works a lot better for some people than doing the cold turkey.
Joining us on the show this week is dietitian and nutrition coach Kim Airy. She's joined us many times before. You can learn all about her on her website, kimairy.com. What sorts of foods are, you know, extremely important to have in order to replace, you know, the protein and the nutrients that you're taking out? Because you mentioned before that, again, teenagers specifically are great at taking things out but not replacing.
Right. So I think if we're going to talk about protein, people can try adding tofu to their diets. They can try adding the various meat analogs or veggie meats. You know, you just walk into your local grocery store and you see lots of choice now. Dried beans, peas, and lentils. And these can be made into the most amazing, amazing dishes. They taste so good. Adding nuts even. And you can add nuts. Yes, we can grind them up and make nut butters, which are all really delicious. Not just peanut butter, but all kinds of different nut butters. And we can make them into the most amazing recipes, though, the nuts. Seeds as well. So that's a great place to get protein. For the B12, it's a little more difficult. It's important to use, again, there's meatless deli meats or those meat replacement products and meat analogs. A lot of them have vitamin B12 added to them. A lot of the milk beverages, for example, soy beverage or different coconut milk, that kind of thing. Some of them are fortified, so they may have some B12 added to them. Soy burgers, that kind of thing, they'll have B12. Or you could take a B12 supplement. There is also a nutritional yeast that's high in B12, and that can be added to the diet. Some people find that a little more of a challenge, and they prefer taking the supplement. Omega-3 fatty acids, it's important to use canola oil, add flaxseed, that kind of thing, to the diet. Flaxseed, to make sure you get enough omega-3 fatty acids. And calcium, again, calcium can be added in milk replacement products, so fortified soy cheese, fortified yogurt, different soy beverage, coconut milk, some of them are definitely fortified. Orange juice can even be fortified.
In your opinion, Kim, what is the biggest challenge of becoming a vegetarian or a vegan?
It takes just a little bit more planning and a little more thought.
So would you tell someone then who's a little bit willy-nilly that if they are going to do this, they really need to do this because it is going to, it's not just, like you can't just whip a meal out of the back of your pants type thing.
Well, exactly. That becomes, it's getting easier now, but I mean, it's not obvious. You can't just, you know, walk out of the house and say, well, I'm going to go to the mall and I'm sure there'll be a vegetarian meal. There may, but there may not be. So it just takes a little bit of thought and planning, and actually you can manage quite well now. I think that's the biggest issue. You just need to take a little bit of thought and a little bit of learning about it so that you know everything you need. There's some excellent books on the subject that teach you how to become healthy vegetarians. And because if you look at those books and look at the food guides, because there are also vegetarian food guides and vegetarian food pyramids, these will help to guide you and help you to make the right choices.
Do you think that most people should become vegetarian or vegan, or is there a happy medium, you know, for both, like meat eaters, dairy product consumers, like all that sort of stuff? Or is things really sort of like leading towards that vegetarian vegan lifestyle?
Well, if we look at the different options, when we look at some of the more recent studies that are coming out, they're saying that people who are following a more plant-based diet are healthier, that people who are following a more plant-based diet are living longer, that people who are following a more plant-based diet, you know, are ultimately doing better than we expected. I think we always expected it would be the other way around. And now we're realizing that, no, a plant-based diet seems to be very healthy. Also, for people with environmental concerns, it seems like a plant-based diet may be a better option as well.
And would you have any final tips for anyone, again, that's thinking of this and is contemplating, you know, really changing their lifestyle to being vegan or vegetarian?
Well, I guess my best tip is to make sure you spend some time learning about it before you do it, before you go all the way. So start by being a flexitarian and gradually introducing more plant-based foods into your diet, and then take the time to really learn about this so when you go whole hog into being a vegetarian or a vegan, you are definitely getting all your nutrients.
Fantastic. And one last question, actually, that just sort of popped into my mind. Is there any correlation between illness and vegetarianism, like not, you know, like you not being, or you being more susceptible to things because you're not getting maybe protein? Or again, I guess if you're being a healthy vegetarian, you are. But have you noticed any of that stuff where people get a bit sicker maybe because of not having the meat or the dairy?
I guess in the populations that they're studying, the ones who are being healthy vegetarians, a lot of the studies are done on Seventh-day Adventist populations where they're, you know, it's a population where people have grown up being vegetarians and they're very healthy vegetarians, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not coming out. But for sure, we know that, you know, I can say just from clinical practice that I see young people in my office all the time on a regular basis with iron deficiency anemia or B12 anemia or more coughs and more colds or more something, and it's because they became vegetarian, they left out a whole food group, and now they're not doing really well.
Okay, so important to note. So really, really, you need to make sure you're replacing what you're taking out with the vegetarian, vegan lifestyle products that you can use.
That's right.
Fantastic. Kim, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
You're really welcome.
That was our dietitian and nutrition expert, Kim Airy. Again, for more information on this topic and other nutrition tips, check out our website, kimairy.com.
Bring on the Remix.
That's Nikki Williams with Glowing, the Danny Verde radio edit on The Kelly Alexander Show. As always, a big shout out to my guests this week, Gray Drake, Nikki Blazina, and Kim Airy. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from TJ Taylor. Sometimes when you attempt the so-called impossible, you do end up falling short, but in the process, you end up accomplishing something incredible. Don't forget to find us on our social media, on Twitter, at @KAlexanderShow, on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com, as well as on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show. And please, please, please make sure to check out our YouTube channel. We've got lots of great videos up there, including our new series, The Beauty Sessions, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Have an awesome week. You and I will chat soon.